Hello and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, a podcast where I show my husband Gilmore Girls, he shows me Dragon Ball, and we try to find some sort of common ground. I'm Paige.
And I'm Grant.
And this week we watched Gilmore Girls Season 7, Episode 9, and Dragon Ball Z Kai, Episode 153. So Grant, what happened on Gilmore Girls?
Oh geez, okay. This week on Gilmore Girls, we had what we've kind of settled into as our kind of standard Gilmore Girls plot structure this season of a Lorelai plot, a Rory plot, and a Luke plot. And as the third plot, Lane has passed the torch on to Luke as the character with a third plot that has nothing to do with anything, so we're going to get him out of the way first. The Luke plot is actually very simple. Anna shows up at the diner, Anna being his baby mama, if you've forgotten, and is like, hey, Luke,
the one with full custody of her child, for the record.
Yes. Is like, hey, Luke, we need to talk. And so he's like, okay, and they go upstairs, and you may recall, dear listener, that the reason April was staying with Luke for a little while was because Anna had to go to New Mexico to take care of her mother, who was sick, needed surgery, something, doesn't matter. And so
was afflicted with the old.
Yes. And so Anna is here now to say, hey, it's been really, really hard to manage all of that when I'm on the other side of the country from her. So I've decided April and I are gonna move to New Mexico. And Luke's like, oh, well, how's April taking it? And Anna's like, well, you know, she's obviously upset about it. She's adjusting, but it'll be okay. But this is what I need to do for our family. And Luke's kind of shell-shocked, and he's kind of like, okay, sure. The next time we see Luke in the episode, it is probably the scene I was most frustrated with in this episode, because the basic arc of the scene is April's hanging out at the diner for whatever her usual hangouts with Luke are. And she's obviously like, okay, yeah, whatever. She's obviously in a bad mood. And Luke's like, hey, are you all right? And she's like, yeah, whatever, I'm fine. And he sort of prods her about it and is like, hey, your mom told me about what's happening, and I know you're upset, but this might be really good for you. And she has a meltdown where she's like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go live in the desert. They don't have seasons. I hate it there. I'm not going to get to ever see any of my friends again. You know, my friend so-and-so moved to Virginia, and she said she'd keep in touch, but she only kept in touch for like a week, and then we never heard from her again. That's what's going to happen with me, and I'd finally made friends, and I was finally like, felt like I had a life, and now I'm going to have to start all over and go back to the weird nerdy girl all over again and have no friends. And she just freaks out and has a breakdown about it. Which, listener, you might be thinking, well, that sounds like a pretty normal scene and a regular reaction for April to have to the situation. Why did Grant say he didn't like it? The reason is that the scene was about as long as it took me to summarize it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only exaggerating a little. She speeds through those emotions really quickly. So it ends up being this really awkward, stilted scene. Like, it feels like she's reading the Cliff's Notes of the scene, which was kind of awkward, but like that's a really quick check-in on how April's doing with all of this, is just this manic rant, and then the scene suddenly over with like her crying into Luke's shoulder.
Yeah, especially because like there was nothing outside to get her to reach, I'm going to be the weird girl all over again, and all this work I've done to make friends will be for nothing. Like, she gets there in like 2 minutes with no help.
Yeah. So Luke had been trying to put on a brave face and do the thing that you do when a kid's about to go through a big change, or when anyone's about to go through a big change, and be like, oh, this is going to be really exciting for you, which we all know is bullshit. And, you know, she has a meltdown, and he has to comfort her, and that kind of steals his resolve that he felt like this was a bad idea, and now he's more assured that this is a bad idea. And so the next time we see him, he has called up Anna to meet him and is like, hey, I wanted to talk more about this April thing. She's like, okay. He's like, look, I feel like she's having a really, really hard time with it, and there are ways that we could make this easier for her. And Anna's like, okay. And Luke has the reasonable suggestions of like, well, what if we put off the move until at least she can finish the school year. And Anna has the reasonable response of, I can't do that for all the reasons why I said, like, that's not a tenable solution right now.
And also then, like, hey, I already thought of that. I am thinking about my kid.
Yeah. And she's like, I thought of that already, Luke. No, that's not going to work. And then he has the also reasonable suggestion of, okay, well, what if she stays with me until she finishes out the school year to make it an easier transition? And Anna has, again, the reasonable response of, I understand, and that's very nice of you, and I get that that could work, but that means me not seeing my daughter for 6 months while I'm also going through a really hard transition and everything. And so I don't, you know, that's just not, you know, that would be great in a perfect world, but this is, we're kind of scrambling here. I can't do that. And then comes the moment where I no longer am on Luke's side from here, right?
Right, where that's fair.
He's like, well, okay, but what if we, like, set dates for when she can come back so she feels more assured that it'll happen? And Anna has the reasonable, which, again, is a reasonable suggestion, but Anna has the reasonable response of, I can't do that. Like, things are too crazy right now for me to plan ahead that far. That's just not possible right now. I don't know what my life is going to look like, as this is a really chaotic situation. And then I guess this is where Luke loses me, because then he's like, well, it doesn't have to be everything, but, like, I already told her that, like, she could come back and visit for spring break or during the summer, right? And Anna's like, wait, what?
Not or, it's an and.
And, you're right, it's an and. And she's like, what? And he's like, yeah, I told her it was no problem. And she's like, yeah, okay, fine, but you're not the only one making that decision. You can't be making promises to her without consulting me first, because now you're making promises that I can't be sure that I can keep. And if we're going to do something like that, we need to both be looped in on that. You cannot do that behind my back. And yeah. Like, oh, what? I didn't know. I didn't know this was going to happen. Right?
Yeah.
And so she basically storms out. She's like, I'm not putting up with this. Now I need to go tell her that that might not happen, and I'm the bad guy, and it's your fault. And so she tells him off, and she storms out of there. I need to backpedal a minute, because there was very briefly another plot introduced. Basically, Liz is about to go into labor, right? Luke's sister. And she's going to do a home birth with a doula, and she wants Luke to be there.
Yeah, it was that scene that you get in every single show where you get two men freaking out about childbirth. He's like, it's a home birth, it's a home birth, it's a home birth!
Oh, God.
There's gonna be fluids in my house!
And so, at the end of that scene, after Anna storms out, Luke gets the call that Liz is pushing. Like, it's happening any minute. And so Luke's like, oh shit, and he runs off to go be there for his sister while she gives birth. Jess's name is mentioned, but the concept of Jess being there is never so much as mentioned, because we couldn't get Melvin to Miglia for the episode.
They talk about how it's important to get the people who are most important to her there.
To be there, so the baby's surrounded by family. Apparently her son doesn't count.
Who's in Philadelphia? It's not even like he's that far.
Yeah, if they know when it's like she seems to be on track for her due date, he can come up for the weekend, you know?
Heck, he's close enough that when she starts labor, he could get on a train.
That's true. Yeah, labor takes a bit. He could make it. Anyway, so Luke's there, baby's born, beautiful little girl. They decide to name the kid Doula because, sure, whatever, Liz and TJ are caricatures. And so they're doing the thing where they're all sitting around, and, oh, she's so perfect, look at her eyes, she's got your eyes, blah, blah, blah. And TJ's like, hey, Uncle Luke, do you want to hold the baby? And at first he's like, oh, no, I don't want to hold the baby, toxic masculinity. But then he holds the baby, and he's like, oh, no, I'm holding the baby now, and I'm feeling feelings. And then TJ's like, hey, this is your Uncle Luke. And he has a daughter who's your cousin April, and she's probably going to be your babysitter. You know, unlike your brother who doesn't exist to you. So Luke kind of has this moment dawn on him. And so then the last time we see Luke in the episode, he has rolled up to Anna's house. And I will give him some credit. He made sure to come during a time when he knew April would be out of the house, so April would not be there for this argument.
Yep.
Which is, I will give him credit for that.
It's the only credit we'll give him.
He shows up, and he basically gives the whole, like, I'm her father, too, and I'll fight you for my rights if I need to. Right?
Yeah, it was very unclear by Scott Patterson's read if he was supposed to be drunk or not.
At the beginning, he's, like, swaying a little bit, like you're supposed to think he's drunk, but he just came from seeing his niece born, so there's no reason to believe in the story that he's drunk.
No, and he just was driving, and they usually don't show people drunk driving without a reason.
Yeah, it's very much like the time that Christopher barged in on dinner a couple seasons back, where it's like, I feel like you were given the direction of drunk, and then they decided to change the story.
Yeah, except they changed the direction mid-scene. Anyway.
Yeah, and so he's basically like, look, the part that he has, the part that he almost has some ground on is, look, I missed everything. I missed her being born. I missed her first steps. I missed dropping her off on her first day at school. I missed her, you know, I missed all of these things in her life. And it wasn't because of me. It was because of you. You made that choice and took those things away from me. And I'm never going to get those things back. And now you're trying to take everything from here away from me too. And that's not fair. And I'm like, okay, you have some reason to be justifiably angry. But then he immediately launches into, like, you can't take her away from me. I have my rights, and I will fight you on it if I have to. Where, like, he doesn't say it, but the implication is, like, I'll see you in court. Like, he's going to start a fucking custody battle with her over this.
I mean, but this is also Luke. He punched a 16-year-old in the street. Who even knows anymore?
Right. So, like, and that's where they leave it. Just he says it to her, and she just kind of gives him a steely glare back, and he storms off.
Yeah, so let's just, you know, give some context for people on the Dragon Ball side. He did not know this child existed until a year ago.
Right.
Then, when her mom, who has full custody, needed help, he, like, took her for a couple of months. And now he's decided that he deserves to be, like, an equal partner on every decision in her life and fight for custody. That's where we are.
It's a complicated situation that I will have some thoughts on when we get to what we thought.
Yeah, but I just want to, like, I want to give that context of this is what he's trying to do.
Yes, this is the situation. So that's the Luke plot. Rory plot is real short, so I'm just going to knock it out. Things are still awkward between Rory and Marty, because Marty pretended not to know her when she bumped into him again because he's dating her friend Lucy, played by Kristen Ritter. It is also Lucy's 21st birthday, but she's also a senior. Sure. So she's like, let's have a birthday party. It's 2002 themed, which is like quirky Gilmore Girls-y thing, but they don't go for the obvious explanation of that would be Lucy's senior year of high school. And so the joke would be that she wants to go back to being a high schooler because she still acts like a vapid high schooler.
Yeah, because this is 2006.
Yeah, it's 2006 when this episode aired, so that's how it timed, but whatever.
Yeah, and there was this one weird, awkward sideline where, like, Paris is like, why is it not a 2001 party? 2001, that's a theme. 2001 is Space Odyssey, and it's like, nobody wants a 9/11 party, Paris.
Nobody wants a 9/11 party, Paris. So, yeah, so that is a thing. And so she's not sure what to do about it. She has a conversation with Lorelai at one point, and is like, Marty's still being weird, and Lorelai's like, well, you need to be the bigger person and be nice to him even when he's being kind of a jerk to you. And she's like, okay. So at the party, she goes up to the bar where Marty's bartending, which, good on them for remembering the detail that Marty was a bartender, and is like, hey, Marty, I want a upside-down tequila slammer
Smash
with a twist.
Or slammer, yeah.
And he's like, I don't know what that is. And she's like, I was making a joke. And he was like, oh, okay. And she's like, Marty, are we really going to do this? Or can we be adults? And he's like, you're right. You mentioned a thing. Therefore, I immediately feel okay now. And I'm going to apologize for my actions. And she's like, okay. And he's like, okay. And makes her a drink. And then later at the party, he goes and sits down next to her. And they're talking for a little bit. And, you know, she's like, hey, I'm glad things are cool. and the last time I saw you this drunk, you were passed out naked in my hallway. And he's like, you were checking me out. And she's like, no, I wasn't. And he is like, well, that's good because I was scrawny then, but now I'm buff. And she was like, yeah, you've done well for yourself. And then he's like, and you're more beautiful than ever.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
And it's just like awkward. And she's like, oh, you should probably be dancing with your girlfriend right now. And he's like, okay. And then he goes and dances and makes out with Lucy. That's the Rory plot.
Yeah, and it's pretty performative making out, to be clear.
For sure. But either way, that's the Rory plot. None of it matters and nobody cares.
Nope.
The Lorelai plot is that Lorelai is concerned about the people of Stars Hollow and whether or not they're going to accept Christopher because he kind of showed up out of nowhere. They got eloped really. They eloped really suddenly, and everybody was rooting for her and Luke. So she's like, I don't know how to feel about this. I need to ease them into it. And Christopher's like, okay, but I can't literally stay inside the house all the time. So they go out walking around while the town is setting up for a knit-a-thon to raise money for the bridge. Now, eagle-eared listeners might remember the bridge as a thing that came out back a couple seasons ago, but during the early seasons, there was a running gag that they built the bridge, but then didn't have a tarp for the bridge, and then it kind of fell into disuse. The new showrunners decided we're bringing the bridge back, where the bridge was all built, but it was actually made out of Japanese maple, which beetles love. So now it's being eaten, and they need a new bridge. That's fun. So they're walking around while the town's getting all set up, and, like, Babette and Miss Patty and everyone are all, like, nice to Christopher, but they're, like, really cordial, boring townspeople nice. They're not, like, wacky Welcome to Stars Hollow nice. So it's all very clearly, like, they're not really too enthused about it, but they're being nice for Lorelai's sake.
Yeah.
And she breaks it to Christopher. He's like, that went great, because Christopher has no social awareness whatsoever.
That's really and his thing this season.
His really his thing. Yeah, they're, like, trying to himbo-fy Christopher. And
No. Himbos have emotional intelligence.
That's true. He doesn't have emotional intelligence, but he still has that same, like...
They're trying to bimboify Christopher.
That's true. You're right. They're just bimbofying him. He's just big, goofy, and handsome. And so Lorelai is like, I know what you should do. You should go on a man date with Jackson because Jackson's really well respected in town. They go really far out of their way to not confirm or deny whether Jackson is still town selectman. That plot has just vanished long ago with no resolution.
Nope.
And so Christopher and Jackson go out for beers and it's awkward and they don't have much to talk about and they don't really have anything in common. And Jackson's clearly a little hostile towards Christopher. And he has a bit where, like, being a farmer, you got to care about your crops day and night, all the time, no matter what. Even the best soil and the best seeds can't make a difference if you don't love your crops. And the crops are Lorelai. And Christopher's like, the crops are Lorelai, aren't they? And he's like, the crops are Lorelai. And Christopher's like, I love the crops too. And Jackson's like, we are instantly friends now because you answered correctly to my riddle. And yeah. So now everyone's being...
Jackson is troll who lives under the bridge with his cousin Rune, confirmed.
Yeah. So now the town's being really nice to Christopher. So it's the knit-a-thon to raise money for the bridge. And then everyone seems like they're behind, like they're not going to make the money. Cause it's like how you pledge for like fun runs and stuff. You pledge by the mile or by the whatever, for the knit-a-thon, you pledge by the skein of yarn. And so they're knitting as fast as they can, but they're not going to make it. So Christopher's like, oh no, I'm going to help.
This is like 5 hours into a 12-hour knit-a-thon.
Yeah, and so Christopher's like, oh no, I'm going to help. And so he goes over and whispers into Taylor's ear. And then Taylor's like, Christopher just gave all the money that we need to finish the bridge. So the knit-a-thon's over, and everyone's just like, oh, okay. And the knit-a-thon's over early, and everybody goes home. And so Lorelai's like, you did a nice thing, but you did it in a way that was kind of taking all the fun out of it. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. And you're kind of an outsider to Stars Hollow. And he's like, well, okay, but I love you.
I mean, he's also just kind of flaunting money, which is awkward.
Also, the thing is, they don't bring that up, right?
Yeah.
Like, you'd think the problem there would be, like, I expected that scene to go, that he just drops the money like it's nothing, and so everyone kind of turns their nose up at him, because it seems like he's just swinging his dick around of, like, I have so much money. But
yeah,
no one seems bothered
by that.
People
are really judgmental of rich people, and it's a problem we need to talk about more.
Well, okay, this show is apparently convinced that this is a real problem, right?
I know.
And so, like, at least be consistent, but, like, yeah, like, we shouldn't go, oh, poor Christopher, but it should be, oh, Christopher, no, you shouldn't swing your dick around like that, even if you have the money to do so. And, you know, that's a thing. That is a thing that you need to be conscious of when you have more money than the people around you. Yep. And so, like, that wasn't the problem. The problem was just that he canceled the fun of the knit-a-thon. But he's like, I'll learn how to be a native of Stars Hollow because I love you. And she's like, I love you too. And that's the Lorelei plot.
The one other thing that's important that happened in this episode is at the beginning, the grandparents found out that they were married.
Oh, right. And they're going to throw a party.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Gilmore Girls. What happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
You know how I was excited last week?
It's okay to say not much.
Not much. Like, this is really back to basics with Dragon Ball, where two guys punch each other while saying, wow, you're not very powerful. Well, you don't even know how I've been holding back, and then punch each other more.
I have a note here that just, this is the most DBZ DBZ fight to ever DBZ.
Right, with a little bit of a sprinkling of, like, these are the times when I remember my mom listens to the podcast, but I don't care. I love you, Mom. We got some Vore this week, which is weird.
Oh, yeah. There was that whole bit there that's definitely somebody's fetish.
Yeah, so not to go into it deeply. And guys, if you don't want to see something kind of gross and sexual, or if you're a minor, please don't Google Vore. Basically, it's a fetish around eating or being eaten.
Yeah, and we got a little bit of that earlier because there was also, like, the dumbass hunter guy that booted the same thing where he just poured himself into his mouth and exploded him from the outside. So,
right,
like,
but this was, like, an extended sequence.
Yeah, this was an extended sequence.
Where, like, Boo realizing he can't beat up Vegito, who's gone Super Saiyan and has, you know, the combined power of Vegeta and Goku exponentially increased because they're fused now, like, fills up his body and expands it.
Which is also somebody's fetish.
Which is, like, yeah, no, this
actually,
is a whole
It's actually
lot
well documented. As many people's fetish as the whole expansion. So, yeah, this was a for a very certain niche of people, this was a very horny episode of Dragon Ball Z.
Right. That's fortunately, unfortunately, whatever. I am not in that subsection, so instead we just got body horror, where Boo is, like, taking over Vegito's body so he can expand it and maybe explode it, but then Vegito, in another thing that's probably someone's kink, controls his muscles so he can force, yeah, as I'm saying, this is definitely someone's kink, so he can force him to different parts of his body, and then is like, oh, I trapped you in my back, you're my giant back pimple, so are we gonna do this or are we gonna fight? And then in a scene that mercifully they don't show us, Boo decides that he wants to fight, and so he somehow gets out of Vegito's body.
Oh, no, they show him go out his mouth again.
Oh, okay, I somehow missed that. I must have looked away or blinked. Thanks, self. And they're squaring up to fight again. Like, there are a couple things that happened that have all happened before, like, oh, I'm going to launch this big attack at the Earth. You either have to avoid it and watch your planet die, or you have to fight it and die. And he's like, no, I don't. I'm just going to divert it over there. Or we've got, again, that classic of, I'm going to do a super cool attack and give it a super cool name of the Big Bang Attack, and it's going to do absolutely nothing. Like, this is like all the rote steps over again, and not that much happens. Like, the narration at the end was, the battle is just beginning. And it's like, Of course it is.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened this week. There's not... I mean, do you have anything else you feel needs calling out?
Not in this section.
I mean, I think just to level set for people who are coming from the Gilmore Girls side, we should explain that at the end, so remember at the end of last episode, Goku and Vegeta put on the Potara earrings and they fused. So yep. This new fighter is named Vegito.
Yep. And he's basically, like, just to give some context, he's basically just grown up Gotenks. Like, it's that same thing of, like, once he's fused, he gets even cockier than Vegeta / Trunks. Although Vegito is a little more disciplined, he's a little more able to back up what he's got, and he's less likely
to spend Vegito,
time on...
I find Vegito infinitely more bearable than Gotenks.
He's infinitely more bearable, but it's still just the, I've got more power, so now you have to deal with a cockier fighter.
Yeah, it's the note that I made is that it's Vegeta's arrogance, but with Goku's power to back it up. So he's more arrogant than Vegeta, but because he's also got all that power, he can talk the talk, but he can also walk the walk.
You're right, but at this point, another cocky man out of Dragon Ball is White Noise.
Oh yeah, no, it's not novel, but it is worth noting.
Yeah. I think I had a note just that was like, amazing, he did the thing again. And I don't even remember what that note's about, but that note is about this entire episode.
There's a brilliantly silly moment where Boo just starts charging up and like the sky starts to break apart and Vegito's just like, oh no, he's charging up so much he's threatening to collapse the entire universe. And then he just flies up and punches him in the face and everything goes back to normal. And he's like, ha, you didn't do it. And they just go back. And it's like a 2-minute segment where the universe was in peril for a minute of like dimensional collapse.
Right.
And it's like, if in the proper hands, that could be silly and ridiculous in like a fun Gurren Lagann way. But yeah. Instead, it was just like, this is how utterly stupid the power charts have gotten in this show. That's just a thing that happens with no real incident.
Well, and we had, like, after the back pimple incident of Dragon Ball episode 153, I think it's Vegito that says, well, that was disgusting and disappointing. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's after thanks. Boo comes out of his mouth, he just goes, well, that was disgusting.
And disappointing. He says disgusting and disappointing.
That was good. That was probably a good one-liner of just him saying it was perfect.
Right, but me sitting in the audience was like, I agree, why am I watching this?
But yeah, no, there's not a whole lot to talk about, as opposed to last week where we had a lot to talk about for Dragon Ball Z Kai.
I think that's really most of what I think. Like, there are also just some weird things where it's definitely like, it almost felt like the tired intern was writing it, and I know we had a couple of those on Gilmore Girls too, and we could talk about those, but like, Goku has a line about how Boo has been absorbing my friends all day. And it was kind of poking at something that could have been interesting that they didn't go into, that Boo's been absorbing people's power at a rapid rate and he's not really integrating them. So this could be another thing like Captain Ginyu, where he takes bodies on but he can't use them. But they don't really go into that. But the thing that really struck me as odd was he refers to Goten, Trunks, and Gohan, and Piccolo, but those three specifically as my friends? You mean your kids? Your sons?
Yeah, like, I get how he's been absorbing my friends and my kids all day would be an awkward mouthful, but...
But, like, that was when they were specifically, like, Boo had specifically said in the previous line, I've absorbed the strength of three Saiyans.
That's true. Yeah, you think that'd be a good spot for... I mean, yes, it could be a good spot to give Vegito some emotion, but even if you wanted to keep it to the cocky action movie thing, that'd be a good minute for a one-liner of like, yeah, you absorb my kids, but who do you think taught them to fight, right? Like,
yeah. The answer, not Goku.
The answer is Piccolo.
Yeah. He's also in there. I don't know if it's worse if that was an actual... choice not to mention it, or if it's that they forgot that maybe he has an emotional stake in this. They can still keep it light. It doesn't have to be, you absorb my son and now I come for war. It could just be that cockiness, but like some acknowledgement that now that Vegito is together, he's lost three sons in a day. That's
yeah,
kind of a deal.
And Goku, and like even beyond that, like Goku and Piccolo and Vegeta and Piccolo have very different relationships, but they do still have, like, both of them do have a connection to Piccolo. And then, like, even on top of that, not even the people he absorbed, but the people that he ate, like, Krillin also, I feel like, has a unique relationship to
and
each of those
two. And his wives.
Yeah, and, yeah, both of his wives, Krillin, even Android 18, like, Vegeta probably had some interesting emotions about Android 18. Like, there is a lot of baggage going on there that Vegito does not seem interested in engaging with, which is frustrating.
And it's even more frustrating, like, if Dragon Ball was a universe where emotions don't have effects on fights, that's one thing. But this is Dragon Ball, where rage specifically is an intrinsic emotion to fighting spirit.
Yeah, and so you'd think, I am angry that you have destroyed everything I love, two people's worth, fused exponentially, would have an effect. Like, he'd be angry, but he doesn't seem angry. He's just, yosha! Like, it's whatever.
Instead, we get lines like, Vegito going Super Saiyan and saying, I call this form Super Vegito.
And then Boo saying, like, how'd you come up with that?
Like, yeah, Boo is not impressed and neither am I. Why are we spending time on this?
Yeah, so there were a couple little nuances in this episode that, like, are interesting to consider, and it's frustrating the episode didn't contend with it, where particularly there's a bit where the Elder Kai and Kibito Kai are watching the fight from the Kai planet. And Kibito Kai specifically, because that's his name now, is he's Kibito Kai, specifically has a line where he talks about how, like, it's not just the Patara earrings that are providing the power. Like, obviously they're an integral part of it, but the Patara earrings only work as well as the bond between the two that are fusing. So,
which is some interesting implications for the Elder Kai.
Yeah. So, like, yes, Vegito's power is because he's a fusion, but Vegito being as powerful as he is, specifically, is because of Goku and Vegeta being very close and fusing. And I think the Elder Kai specifically says the fact that they fought each other so many times.
Yeah.
Contribute, like, you know, means that they can fuse better because they know each other's fighting styles.
Yeah.
Well, and like, Kibito Kai even says, like, oh, their rivalry seems so petty in retrospect. They make such a great team. And that's an interesting, like, one, that's an interesting piece of world building and an interesting commentary on Goku and Vegeta's relationship. But the thing that I wish they mentioned is, what does that say about the potential fusion between Goku and Gohan?
Mm.
Because it really highlights the fact that if Goku and Gohan had managed to pull off fusion, the situation would already be done.
Yeah.
Because the implication here is that Vegito probably has the power to just dust Boo. Like, or at the very least, he could end the situation faster if he was just going all out from the start. And it is mostly Vegeta's arrogance that is causing him to have fun with it. Yes, Goku has that tendency too, but if he were merged with Gohan, he would have Gohan's more level-headedness.
It's that person who acts differently depending on which friends they're hanging out with.
Yeah, and yes, Gohan, we have seen before, when he gets a power boost, he can also lean into that Saiyan arrogance. But I feel like Gohan would act as a mitigating factor to Goku, and we'd have a more level-headed fighter if we had Goku and Gohan fusing. And if Goku and Vegeta, their closeness makes a very strong fighter, how strong would a fighter made between father and son be, who trained together for a year in the hyperbolic time chamber? Like, we make jokes, haha, Goku's a bad dad, and they are mostly founded, but like, Goku and Gohan are still close. They do still have a close relationship.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to fighting. And so, like, what kind of indestructible fucking ruthless super warrior would we have gotten with a Goku-Gohan fusion? It really makes you want to think about it.
Really, guys, what we're asking for is send us your Dragon Ball Z Pacific Rim AUs.
Yes.
Well, and the other thing that's frustrating here is they spend some time talking about that, but they do also say it again when they're saying Boo has spent all day absorbing people and that he hasn't really taken them on, but we don't see how that affects their fighting styles. We see both Boo and Vegito be excellent at fighting, and yes, it seems like Vegito is better. Boo just is more resilient because he can come back from almost nothing. But what does that actively mean for his fighting style if he has multiple people's unincorporated fight styles that some of them might work well together, some of them might not? Like, I could see an argument being made for Gohan, Piccolo, and Goten, and Trunks all working well together because if you think about it, Piccolo sparred with Gohan. Gohan and Goten sparred together, even if Goten was mostly taught by Chi-Chi. Goten and Trunks have fused. Like, there's a connection between all of them, so they probably have some understanding of their own fighting style, but Goten and Trunks aren't going to try to incorporate someone else's fighting style within their own before they were able to fuse, which does show that they've come to a closer place, but they couldn't be two men in a suit together. Like, where is this negative side effect of merging multiple personalities and power sets in a short period of time?
Yeah, I wish that they had leaned into that a little more.
Yeah, I believe that I could see it later. Who knows? Dragon Ball surprised me before, but I feel like I'm not going to.
I'm almost certain you're not going to.
Do you have any more thoughts?
Not really. There's not a whole lot to talk about in this episode. It was a lot of things that were like, this would be really fun if it was directed differently, but this episode just kind of felt like going through the motions. Like, Toriyama had this great idea of how to get the fusion to happen, and then once it did, he went,
He got bored and walked away from his toys.
Yeah, it was like, then they fight. I don't know how to make this fight interesting, and so it's unfortunate. Watching this as a kid, I gotta tell you, 8-year-old Grant, this fight was the hypest shit ever. But looking at it through a critical eye, there's just really nothing there.
Yeah. So what did you think of Gilmore Girls this week? Speaking of things that try to go through the paces to regain the old magic.
I was bored by this episode of Gilmore Girls. Honestly, there is nothing of worth to talk about in the Rory plot.
No.
It happened. I don't want to talk about it. Nobody cares. There is.
I mean, I'm going to just talk about it really quick that this is why. Like, I know we didn't get much of Marty, but do you buy him, like, suddenly coming on to a girl years later while his girlfriend is in the room?
I don't know, because Marty never had characterization to begin with.
It's frustrating that this is somebody who his characterization wasn't strong earlier, but it was decent guy was the best you could say for it, and not Logan, which is another great feature.
Yeah, but yeah, now I guess he just always carried that torch for Rory the whole time.
Sure, why not?
We went on like maybe 2 dates 2 years ago, and so now I have a different girlfriend, but I apparently have still been carrying this torch for you from our 2 dates. Years ago for this long, and I also don't understand all that culminating in I'm gonna make a pass at you when I know you have a committed boyfriend and I have a girlfriend in the middle of this party. Yes, they're both drunk, but still.
Yeah.
So, like, these are all the little elements that made up this scene. I can understand them in isolation as, like, feels bad, man, but I can see how it happened. But putting it all together, it really does just kind of make Marty seem like a really sad, just a sad man.
Yeah.
And kind of a dick.
Well, especially because, like, just his only characterization up until this point was, you know, a little disappointed and mad that Rory was friend-zoning him, which is never a good look. But decent guy who's not going to treat her like Logan, and then suddenly it's like, oh, right, people liked him and didn't like Logan. We're going to need to fix that.
Yeah, so whatever. It happened. I don't care.
Okay.
The Lorelai plot, I kind of also don't care, because I kind of really don't care about this marriage thing. They really, really, really want me to care, and I really, really, really don't. But I guess from a structural standpoint, it wasn't. The nice thing I can say about this plot is I bought the idea that Lorelai has doubts creeping in about her decisions more here than I did last week.
That's fair.
That was telegraphed much better, and it made a lot more sense in this episode than it did last episode. And the whole, like, oh, I don't know if you need to come out running errands with me thing was avoidance in a classic Lorelai way that felt true to the character. What didn't feel true to the character was her, well, it kind of didn't, was her, like, flipping out about the concept of Emily wanting to throw her a wedding party. It's not necessarily out of character for Lorelai, but the times when Lorelai ends up seeming spoiled and ungrateful for, like, ugh, my parents are trying to do a nice thing for me, are usually balanced out by other things to make Lorelai likable, and those things have been in short supply lately, so I've just really found myself annoyed with Lorelai more lately than I usually am.
Yeah.
My understanding is that I am not unique in this perspective of the later seasons. So, like, that was a thing, and it's like, okay, yeah, I bought that she didn't felt weird about Christopher, and I bought that the town would give them, like, sort of a weird freezing out welcome thing. If anything, I wish they leaned into it a little more and had, like, Babette and Miss Patty seem more outwardly upset about Christopher being around, but whatever. They were able to keep their shit together for 5 minutes. I guess anything can happen.
Well, and I am a little frustrated by this knit-a-thon. Because, like, some of the things that I really enjoyed about the show, and I know that these were hit and miss for you, but some of the times where Stars Hollow is most interesting as a character is when they have these town events. I know you weren't as into it, but they had the, you know, the basket auction thing, and they had the dance-a-thon, which was a great episode. But this just, like, was like, oh, you like when we do wacky town events? Okay, we'll do a wacky town event. Look at all these giant knitting needles.
See, I didn't dislike the knit-a-thon. I thought the knit-a-thon was a cute idea.
I mean, the knit-a-thon was a cute idea. I think the thing that rubbed me the wrong way, other than the fact that they weren't willing to commit to it for the full episode, like, part of the plot is that it gets stopped early, but just, like, they take it to a point where it's comedic and unachievable. Because previously, like, let's say the dance-a-thon, it was comedically over the top in that Taylor Dosey stays up all night and Kirk always takes a victory lap to the Rocky theme. Like, that's stupid, that's wacky town stuff, but that's all stuff within a small town budget. Even in, like, the Tisket-a-Tasket, like, sure, there was, like, the over-the-top basket made of breadsticks and goat cheese, but that was something Suki could reasonably do. Meanwhile, they're trying to raise money for the town bridge and can't raise roughly $10,000, probably $10,000 to $15,000.
But they can't have the giant novelty knitting needles. Okay, I see what you mean.
And giant novelty balls of yarn, yeah. Like, I mean, maybe Miss Patty had those. But I would have liked, like, a line that, like, made this seem like a thing, an actual small town. Like, I know, I am the first in line to say that Stars Hollow, in a lot of ways, doesn't feel realistic to a small town. But, like, this was just, like, this was really just a fun, quirky event mapped onto a small town.
So, I want to actually go up to bat for it being cut off early, though.
I mean, like, from Christopher, that made perfect sense and that was interesting.
Yeah. But I think you mentioned it. It made me realize that it actually works on multiple levels. One, it would just be the dance-a-thon episode again, and we don't need that.
But two, I would take another dance-a-thon. Keep going.
But two, the point is that Christopher's intervening cuts
ruined
off a fun town event. So we're all geared up for a fun, wacky Stars Hollow episode where they're going to knit, and Christopher cuts that plot short.
Yeah.
So our disappointment mirrors that of the town.
Yeah,
really,
that's
Lorelai.
Fair.
The rest of the town's fine with it. Lorelai is the only one who's disappointed.
I mean, the rest of the town is kind of like, oh, I guess we're going to pack up and go home. You can tell that they probably would have had some sort of fun with it, but yeah, it's mostly Lorelai.
So, like, that I didn't mind as much. Really, the more frustrating thing to me is that they're bringing the bridge thing back. Especially because they also brought the red light thing back earlier in the season. So it's like, we're just dragging out all of these running gags from the early seasons. Isn't this fun, guys?
Except they can't keep track of their running gags.
No, they can't because, thank you, because there is a bit where Suki and Lorelai are discussing what Christopher and Jackson can do to go to a place where they can be seen getting along so Christopher can get Jackson street cred. And they mention eating pancakes at Al's Pancake World. But Al's Pancake World does not serve pancakes. This has been thoroughly established many times. And so just like Christopher is this new rich guy coming into town and messing up our knit-a-thons, David S. Rosenthal's just strolling into the show like he owns the place and being like, Al's Pancake World, they eat pancakes, right? No, outsider. They do not serve pancakes at Al's Pancake World. You need to go back and do your research if you're going to come in here and act like you're running the show now when you don't even know these basic Stars Hollow facts. I was offended. Anyway, I want to talk about the Luke stuff.
Let's talk about the Luke thing.
I realize that Luke is meant to be the bad guy here.
Yeah.
But honestly, this is an everyone sucks here situation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Yes, Anna has sole custody of April. Yes, April has been in Anna's life for 12 years. She's been in Luke's for one.
Yeah, I would say, well, 13 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, so, like, yes, at the end of the day, Anna does and should have more say over what is happening in April's life than Luke's.
And has more context.
And has more context, and just generally has more experience of this whole parenthood thing, and is better equipped to make these decisions. However, her just kind of rolling up on Luke's diner, being like, by the way, they're moving to New Mexico, and she did not even pay lip service to the fact that this might be hard for Luke.
Yeah.
I was waiting for her to at least mention, like, and I know you and April have been getting closer, and I'm sorry to do this, but you need to understand the position I'm in, right?
Yeah, and especially because, like, she's just been away from her daughter for 2 months. Like, and it must be different for Luke. She knows that, but she knows what it's like to get to know her kid, and she probably thinks her kid is pretty great. Most parents do. And, like, she should know what it's like to be away from your daughter.
Yeah, but, like, she doesn't even mention it. Like, it doesn't even occur to her that Luke might have a problem with this until he shows up at her house at the end of the day, or at the end of the episode. Like, and that is really frustrating to me because Anna has been shown previously to be a very decisive woman who knows what she wants and knows what her boundaries are, and it is kind of her way or the highway. But also, when Luke said, I want a relationship with her, she said, okay. Like, she understands, and she has apologized in the past for keeping April a secret from him. She understands that Luke and April have a relationship, and that even if she did not handle it well at the outset, she understands now that he kind of does deserve a relationship with his daughter, right?
Yeah.
It's not his fault that he wasn't around for those first 12 years.
Yeah.
And so I don't expect her to change her plans, right? Because she has a very good reason, and it is kind of like it's out of her hand. She's not doing it for funsies. She's doing it because she has to. And so I don't expect her to make those changes. That's unreasonable. And I don't think Luke expects her to make those changes either. But... And so, yeah, Luke rolling up and being like, I'm going to fight you on this. Yes, he is being belligerent and he is being a dick about it. But at the same time, Anna kind of drove him to it by stonewalling his feelings for the entire episode.
Yeah, so, like, no, I would. Yeah.
It's really, really frustrating because it's like, this is not how adults communicate about things.
Yeah. No, because I would say that Luke is more wrong here because he's putting Like, when Anna's in a hard situation, he is both making it harder for her and, by extension, April. Like, he doesn't mean to, but he's making it harder for April.
I agree.
And he's assuming that she's not a good mom who's trying to do this in the best way possible for her kid. And that's frustrating, but there is no reason these people can't have an adult conversation, especially because being able to talk about his feelings and what's bothering him has been, like, it's supposed to be a big breakthrough for Luke.
Yeah, it's central to his character arc.
It's central to his character arc. And so I would love to see an episode where he goes from the baby and he's, like, steaming up a storm and he's ready to go to bat. And he comes in and Anna's crying.
Yeah, like, show us... Yeah. Well, because, yeah, like,
Anna's leaving her store. She's leaving her town. Like, it's not Stars Hollow, but she presumably, like, she seems to have a pretty settled place in the neighborhood. She has a shop where she's friendly with customers. Her kid's been going to the same school for 13 years. Like, this is where she's grounded, and she's doing something. Like, this is a woman who is having to choose between doing what she sees as best for her mom and what she sees as best for her kid.
It's a horrible situation.
It's a horrible situation, and she's doing it by herself. Like, yes, she should include Luke in those decisions. Yes, she should acknowledge his feelings, but, like, she has been in a mode for 13 years where she does everything by herself. It must have been a huge revelation to her to be able to go to her mom for 2 months, but being without her kid was probably disorienting. And she's not used to having someone else to lean on in these decisions.
Yeah, and, like, Anna, they've gone out of their way a couple times to mirror Anna and April with Lorelai and Rory.
Uh-huh.
And we know that Lorelai freaks out if Rory's away from her for a day in the early seasons, right?
Right. And even more than that, like, Lorelai freaks out if you suggest that she might have to leave Stars Hollow. If Luke had come in with his guns blazing, ready to fight, and he'd come in and he saw that she was hurting and this was hard on her too, and they had to figure out together as adults what they could do for April... That's the other thing that's frustrating is, like, nobody in this situation seems to be making decisions for with April in mind. Anna has April in mind, of course, but her mom has to come first, and her mom's needs currently have to come first. And if that means ripping her kid out of a school where she feels settled and okay, she doesn't seem to be doing much to, like, ease that transition. Meanwhile, Luke is thinking about what he missed out on. He's thinking he never got to see her first steps. He's thinking that, you know, he's just getting to know this kid and she's going to be gone. Who's thinking about April?
I mean, I think Luke is also, like, he's thinking about himself, but he is also thinking about April. Like, when the thing that makes him first come to Anna is seeing how upset April is about all of this.
Right.
So I think he is thinking about April, but I think by the end of the episode, he transitions to thinking more about himself.
Right, exactly. But I mean, even just telling a kid you're going to buy her tickets to see you without checking in with the mom to make sure this is something that's doable, that's not really being a dad.
Yeah, so, I agree with you that I wish we had gotten some glimpse of the fact that this is hard for Anna.
Yeah.
Because by making her just seem like this Iron Maiden the whole time, it makes mm-hmm. her come off as the bad guy when she shouldn't.
No, she shouldn't. Well, and even just, like, I don't even blame Luke for buying the tickets. It's just, if they had had that actual conversation where she wasn't the Iron Woman and she said, you know what, I want you to be able to buy the tickets too. I want you to be, like, able to have a place for her where she can come and see her friends, but I can't do that right now, and I don't want to break any promises to her, and, like, actually showed some vulnerability where she could show Luke how much he was trying to help April but could actually hurt her, that would be interesting. There's so much interesting stuff that we will not get.
Yeah, it was really frustrating. Yeah, that's basically my thoughts on this episode of Gilmore Girls. I also did not believe Christopher and Jackson's awkward bro date for a second, but...
No, that was so weird.
It was super weird.
I didn't
want
to be there.
I like you now. Like, really? It felt like Lorelai and Digger's first date, where it was horrible and awkward, and I wanted desperately to claw my way out of that scene the entire time it was happening. But then the next scene, they're like, it went great. Like, no, it didn't. Did we watch the same thing?
Yeah.
But yeah, those are my thoughts on Gilmore Girls. Do you have any questions for me about Dragon Ball Z Kai?
I do have two small questions. One, we had a scene that obviously existed so the animators wouldn't have to animate things, where Boo shrouded himself in steam from his pores, also someone's kink, and then, like, got in a big fight with Vegito in the steam because he thought that this would mask his movements and give him an advantage, but Vegito can sense energy, and so obviously he could tell where Boo was the entire time as clearly as if he could see him. And Vegito had to explain this to Boo. Haven't we already established that not only can this Boo sense energies, because he could find the lookout, but also he's absorbed the abilities of Piccolo and the knowledge in it, fighting style?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It makes zero sense.
No, it doesn't make any
Piccolo
sense. It's a plot hole.
And Gohan and Goten and Trunks.
Yep, it's a plot hole. Moving on.
So I just want to ask, in the future, because I'm assuming that at some point Goku and Vegeta will be split up, because I've seen things that have happened since and they are split up, so this is not forever. Will Goku ever call Vegeta his other half?
You know, he might make a joke about it.
Okay. That's all I want.
You haven't asked me the most obvious question.
What is that?
How did they get the name Vegito?
I just figured they stole the O from Goku.
See, the answer is more interesting.
Okay, give it to me.
Because it's lost in translation, right? And there is this notion that when they fuse with the Potara earrings, Vegeta's kind of the more dominant personality.
Yeah.
And the name Vegito is the crux of that theory. Because Vegito is what you get when you mix Vegeta and Kakaroto.
Oh.
So in Japanese, Kakarot is Kakaroto. And so when you mix the two, it is Vegito. It's the toe from Kakaroto.
Huh.
So when they're merged, he thinks of his Goku half as Kakarot. And that's how he gets the name.
Interesting.
It is an interesting little nuance. As opposed to Gogeta, who obviously pulls Goku.
Yeah.
It's an interesting little nuance. I wish there was a little more to it, but it's a fun little quirk.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
I have no questions about Gilmore Girls that I haven't already asked.
Okay. Who do you want to swap? In this episode of Dragon Ball, there are exactly two characters, so we can each take one.
I mean, technically, there is also Kibito Kai and the Elder Kai.
But are there really?
They were there. They had things to say.
I know. Okay, so who do you want to swap?
I want to swap Vegito.
Okay.
With Paris and Doyle.
Okay. Daris.
Because it was a big thing at the party that Paris and Doyle were tearing up the dance floor because they'd been practicing. Because I guess Paris really wanted to show off at this college party. I could see her wanting to show off at one last college party as like a last hurrah before she graduates. To prove she can do it. And so I feel like Paris and Doyle would form the new super warrior Poyle. Peroyal? No,
Peril.
Poyle. Poyle's Peril. Good.
Poyle.
Poyle. Poyle's Poyle. Good. And I feel like that Paris's no-nonsense personality would dominate. And we'd get somebody who would just eliminate Boo immediately, right? Problem solved. Instead of playing around. Meanwhile, Goku and Vegeta showing up to a 2002 themed party, they would be kings. Like, oh my god, this 2002 themed party is so rad. Goku and Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z showed up. That's how 2002 this party is. Goku's here. Vegeta's doing a keg stand.
Well, it's because someone told him that Kakarot already did a keg stand.
Already did a keg stand. Like, damn you, Kakarot, no. I'll do two keg stands.
Yeah, he's
then
doing
you'll
two
see.
At once.
Yes. That's my swap. Who do you want to swap?
Oh, geez. So I guess I have to swap Boo.
I mean, you don't have to. You could also swap Vegito.
I want to swap Boo with Christopher. Christopher tries to defeat Vegito by paying him off with $7,800.
You know, that would have worked on Android 18.
It would have worked on Android 18, and I feel like, you know, if Chi-Chi was still around, it would have worked on Goku, too. But meanwhile, we've got Boo in the Stars Hollow Knit-a-thon trying to comprehend why everyone's knitting to fix this bridge when he could just, you know, turn all of the townsfolk into a bridge and fix the entire problem.
That's true. He is no stranger to turning people into building materials.
Mm-hmm. You would have, you know, this nice new creepy white made out of people bridge, and if any beetles tried to eat it, they'd become bridge too.
Okay, that's good.
Well, thank you all for listening. I guess we're ending on that note. We'd love to hear from you on social media. Our Facebook is Gilmore Ball Z. Our Twitter is at Gilmore Ball Z. Our email is gilmoreballz@gmail.com, and our website is gilmore-ball-z.pinecast.co. Please rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Facebook, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as always, we are matching with the Gohan and Rory Fund, where we record bonus episodes in exchange for your generous donations. You can check out the Gohan and Rory Fund link in our website to see our current stretch goals. We're also matching every donation dollar for dollar. If you're in a giving mood, please consider donating. The one thing that we have going on, and I think we shared this on social media a couple weeks ago, the New Georgia Project is a nonpartisan organization that's trying to make sure that everyone in Georgia can have their voices heard in the runoff election that's happening. This is a pretty big election. A lot of people are watching it, but everyone in Georgia should have a right to say who's representing them. We will be matching donations to that 2-to-1. So if you give $1, $3 will go to the New Georgia Project. If you want to find out more about that, you can go to the Gohan and Rory Fund page. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Saturday.
So, if Boo absorbed Christopher, would he get his snazzy wardrobe? Does Marty hit on girls whenever he's drunk, or is that just a Rory thing? And is Paige ready for where Vegito versus Boo goes next? I promise she's not. Find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.